Last-ditch talks in Vienna to save the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. Tehran says progress was made at the talks, but it's still not enough to preserve the agreement. Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said what had been agreed was one step forward, but it's still not meeting Tehran's expectations. The U.S. Special Representative for Iran, Brian Hook, has threatened European countries to either do business with the U.S. or with Iran. Tehran says it no longer feels bound by certain limits in the deal due to U.S. unilateral withdrawal in May 2018 and the U.S. inaction to keep the deal up and running. In tonight's debate, we'll discuss the latest twists and turns in Iran's teetering nuclear deal. But before that, let's get an update from Press TV's Homa Lezgi, who is in Vienna, about the highlights of today's meeting. Homa, over to you.
I think an important sentence that we could gauge from Mr. Araghchi when he was speaking was that he said, if I were to decide what I saw in the meeting today, it's not enough to change Iran's actions. The actions that it's already taken to, in his words, reduce some of its commitments under the JCPOA. He did say, however, the decision is not going to be made by him, but by high authorities in Tehran. He's going to convey his message to them on what happened here in Vienna. It's up to Tehran to decide whether it is going to enter that phase two. Of course, the first phase that Iran has already undertaken is that it's suspending the limits that have been set on the production of the low-enriched uranium. If it exceeds the 300 kilogram level, then that would be in violation of the text of the agreement. However, this does not mean that Iran is violating the JCPOA, because it has the right to limit some of its commitments if it argues that the other side is not performing its commitments. It has the right to, it says, go ahead with this limitation. The next step, Iran says, would be from the 7th of July, when it would also increase the level of uranium enrichment. Is it going to do that or not? Mr. Araghchi could not say, but he did say that it's Iran's expectations are not being met, because INSTEX, or the financial mechanism that's been introduced and was again, in this meeting, reiterated by the Europeans in more detail, is not going to cover, as of now, the Iranian oil sales, and that's what's important for Iran. China, however, did say, as you mentioned also in your news, that it is not going to heed the U.S. pressure. The head of the Chinese delegation here was very clear about that, saying that China will not accept this U.S. a policy, quote, of maximum pressure. And he also said that he is urging now the EU to allow for third countries to also use this mechanism. And Mr. Araghchi also said that those countries that used to buy Iranian oil are now looking at different mechanisms to try and use it to continue purchasing Iranian oil, despite this maximum pressure that's being imposed from the United States.
All right, thanks a lot. Homa, Press TV's Homa Lezgi joining us from Vienna. Well, joining us on tonight's debate, we've got political analyst Charles Ortel joining us from New York, and also senior research fellow at Global Policy Institute, George Samueli, joining us from Budapest. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with our guest in Budapest. Iran is saying that it's been sticking to the deal. The UN nuclear watchdog has confirmed its commitment in 15 back-to-back reports, but a multilateral agreement cannot be kept unilaterally. Let's listen to what Iran's UN envoy said at the UN Security Council on Wednesday.
In practical terms, the JCPOA has become an agreement which is being respected only by one party. A multilateral agreement cannot be implemented unilaterally. Iran has done a lot, and much more than its fair share, to preserve the nuclear deal. Iran alone cannot, shall not, and will not take all of the burdens anymore to preserve the JCPOA.
Mr. Samueli, in Budapest, the Iranian envoy makes a compelling argument there, doesn't he?
It's a very compelling argument. And it's also very important to remember that this enrichment that Iran is continuing to undertake is all perfectly legal under the JCPOA. So even if they exceed this limit, then it's only because the United States, when it withdrew from the JCPOA and imposed sanctions on everybody else, they imposed sanctions on precisely those countries that were pledged to purchase enrich uranium from Iran. So given that the JCPOA permitted Iran to continue low-level enrichment, and given that the JCPOA stipulated that any excessive enriched uranium will be transferred by Iran to other countries, and given that the United States sanctioned precisely those countries that they are not to undergo, conduct this kind of business with Iran, then of course we're in this situation that Iran is on the brink of exceeding these limits. So again, Iran has done nothing wrong, and it really needs to, continue to do trade with the rest of the world. You know, it needs to sell oil in order to generate revenue, in order to to feed its people.
Charles Ortel in New York, your thoughts on the comments made by Iran's UN envoy?
Well, I actually think the argument could best be described as how to play a losing hand poorly. I mean, when we look at underlying facts here, and forgive me, there's a little bit of feedback in my ear. When we look at the underlying facts, what we have is we have a situation where the largest market in the world, the largest unified market in the world, is the United States. We used to be hostage to the Middle East for a large percentage of our vital energy supplies. That is now no longer the case. Our market for goods and services is gigantic. It's almost more than three times that of China's. We have one quarter the number of people. It's a very advanced and very developed market. Europe has marched down a path of basically economic destruction and strangulation under the EU, putting yet another big multi-country bureaucracy on top of countries that are saddled with too much bureaucracy to begin with. Europe indeed is still hostage to imported oil, a lot of it from the Middle East. The United States shoulders a disproportionately high percentage of the defense burden for European countries. There are a lot of positive reasons for Europe to look across the Atlantic and trade and be very active and supportive with the United States. That cannot be said of looking the other way over at Iran. And, you know, I don't understand and cannot explain why Iran and the United States have been at loggerheads for decades. It is maybe just a star-crossed set of relationships that can never be put back together. But I hope for the benefit of the people of Iran that the government of Iran begins to think clearly about its economic plight, because it certainly is not doing so right now.
Mr. Samuel Lee, what do you have to say about Mr. Ortel's perception of the situation?
Well, the truth is that the United States gets away with what it gets away with by pressuring its economic partners, because they never expect, the Americans never expect, that anybody else will counter their sanctions. Now, the EU has been very patient with the United States and has not threatened counter sanctions. Yet it would be very easy for the EU now to respond to the United States and say, okay, you want to sanction us, we're going to sanction you. We're going to cut you out of the EU market. We're going to make life very difficult for your internet companies. We're going to make life very difficult for your movie and TV companies. There are all sorts of ways in which the EU can hit back at the United States. So far, as unfortunately happened, the EU has been very passive to the Americans, but there's no real reason for it. There's ample opportunity for counter-sanctions against the United States.
Charles Ortel, last-ditch efforts failed to meet Tehran's expectations today in Vienna. Why hasn't there been a breakthrough? Do Europeans lack the will, or do they lack the capability to keep the JCPOA fully live, or is it both?
Well, I think the JCPOA, and not mind you, I don't know that any outsider has ever read the entire JCPOA and any side agreements and side letters and confidential arrangements that may have been made to put that crazy quilt together. So that JCPOA arguably was dead on arrival when it was first mooted in the United States context, because even the Obama administration did not dare try to go down a path of getting our Senate to consider in confirming it, because of course it never would have passed the Democrat influenced Senate, let alone the Senate as it now is structured. So to go and talk about the fine points of the JCPOA as if it matters, it doesn't matter. It's never going to matter. It's done. It's dead. It's dusted. If you want to have a new arrangement going forward to be a thoughtful arrangement that is transparent to the public at large and that has the best interests of all the parties at heart. This clearly did not. It has been rejected by the Trump administration. You could go down a path, I suppose, as the Iranian team and say, well, maybe Donald Trump won't be reelected. And of course, there's a possibility he won't be. But what if he is?
Mr. Wartell,
what if, in fact, in the coming 2020 election, Republicans gain greater power? That is to say, economically conservative Republicans gain greater power in the Senate and the House, and Donald Trump gets reelected. I think Iran is looking at a protracted period in the wilderness, and certainly those of our European allies who want to go up against us, there is no EU army. There is no formidable political force called the EU. It is an arrangement that has not ever really been perfected in a truly unified common market. So you're seeing UK will leave the EU, and other nations are going to follow. So to again, if you want to play a losing hand poorly, continue down this track.
All right, Mr. Samueli, I believe that you disagree with the comments made by Mr. Wartell. He also stated that the Senate didn't pass the JCPOA. It was mooted. It was dead on arrival. However, we have to realize that it was ratified by a United Nations Security Council resolution. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, for the very point that you just made, it was ratified by the United Nations Security Council. So for the United States then now to walk out on it and say, well, we didn't actually sign it, okay, fine. So what's the incentive for anybody at all, at any time, to come to any kind of an agreement with the United States if the next man in is going to walk out on the agreement? There is no way in the world that Iran, which is an ancient nation, an ancient people, who have been fighting off conquerors for centuries, there is no way that Iran is just going to lie down and accept the humiliating terms that Trump and Pompeo are imposing on it. It will act against it, and it's going to make life extremely unpleasant for the United States. And the notion that the Americans can just do whatever they want, they've got this great formidable army, they can go to war and so on, give me a break. I mean, we've seen how Americans go to war. It usually ends up very, very badly for the Americans. So I don't think the United States should be thinking of going down that path.
Charles Wartell, there was a question for you in there. Why would anybody want to sit and talk with the United States if the next man in can just walk out on any deal made with the previous administration?
Well, you know, I'll turn that question around on my interlocutor here. The reason that this was a bad deal from the beginning is that it was not structured as a formal treaty. Under U.S. law, if it's a formal treaty, it has to get ratified by the Senate. And I would submit to you that the Obama administration and those responsible for trying to concoct this monstrosity looked at it and knew they could never get it across the line as a treaty. So they didn't try. They structured it as an agreement. Now, you bring up the question of the U.N. The U.N., I think, is also in for a period where it will need to be radically reformed and transformed for the better. I won't get into the details, but I and others have been studying the hundreds of billions of dollars of aid that the U.N. has been filtering around the world, and by our estimate, approximately two-thirds of it has disappeared in graft and corruption. And if you think the Trump administration is just going to sit and let the U.N. Throw out tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars into the wind and burn it going forward, that's not going to happen. The U.N. is also in need of badly needed reforms. So, yes, you want to have binding U.N. resolutions? Let's have a U.N. that is not riven with corruption, because that's what it is right now, and the facts are clear on that.
Okay, Mr. Samueli, would you like to respond to that? And Mr. Wartell, I'd like to add something. It's very puzzling for me how you referred to a landmark peace agreement as a monstrosity. We can get back to that in a matter of moments. Mr. Samueli, would you like to respond to Mr. Ortel?
Well, all this talk about corruption is a lot of hot air. The reason why the United States complains about the United Nations is because of what it is. It's the United Nations. And the United States is just one of the nation of the United Nations. It's even one of the permanent members of the Security Council of the United Nations. So the United States does not get its way in the United Nations. Hence, it is very frustrated, and hence it's constantly whining about the United Nations. Nothing to do with corruption. It's just simply that it resists all of the various ploys that the United States undertakes. So, for instance, the United States' obsession with Iran is sui generis. The only other country in the world that is obsessed with Iran is Israel. Everybody else is perfectly happy to work with Iran. The United States rejects all the various international consensus on the two-state solution in the Middle East. It's done this for decades, ever since the 1967 war. And of course, the rest of the world adheres to the two-state solution. It expresses itself in the will of the United Nations. So the United States responds to that United Nations, oh, it's this terrible monstrosity called the United Nations. Well, you know, yeah, it's known as the international community, and you have to accept it if you're going to be part of the international community.
Sure. Charles Ortel, regarding your comments on the JCPOA, you said it's dead on arrival. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, the very hawkish National Security Advisor, said on Wednesday that there was no reason for Iran to walk away from its commitments under the nuclear deal. Now, despite the U.S. just doing the same thing last year, it's kind of tough to balance what the stance is. Do they accept the deal? Do they want Iran to stay in the deal? This reeks of hypocrisy, in my opinion.
Again, you know, when I look, I am in the deal-making business, not in politics. And when I make a deal, I make a complete deal. And I like deals where you can see every aspect of the deal, not just the public face of a deal with the secret side of letters that gut the public face of it. And I say the JCPOA was a monstrosity because it was not completely visible. Nobody, myself included, knows all the elements of the detail, but one thing that's a fact is the United States says we renounce it, having considered the new administration, having considered the fine elements of it. So when we understand, when we grow to understand, which I believe we will, possibly because Iran will reveal it, the deals that were made by Iran with individual signatories to get them to cross the line on that JCPOA, we will fully understand why the Trump administration left. And then your next calculation is going to be how long until a follow-on administration, and is the follow-on administration going to follow the path of Donald Trump or reject it? That's a big question.
All right, George Samueli, the non-dollar system, the INSTEX system has become functional just recently, yet it still falls short of addressing the issue of Iranian oil. Many observers say that Europe has not been wholeheartedly in this deal since Washington pulled out. Do you see it in that light as well?
Well, I think that's right. Now, the INSTEX agreement now seems to be up and running. We'll have to see whether it is indeed up and running. But Iran's main problem at the moment is that it's not able to export enough oil to generate enough revenue in order for its economy to continue to function. That's what it needs to do. It needs to make sure that other countries continue to purchase Iranian oil. Now, China said today that it will continue to purchase it. We'll have to see what India does. Now, Japan has said that it will also purchase some Iranian oil, but the Americans are likely to put a lot of pressure on the Japanese, so I wouldn't necessarily count on Japan holding forth on that promise. But that's where Iran's problems lie. You know, it's not generating enough revenue from its oil sales. So, you know, even if the INSTEX agreement gets to be functional, you know, it still has to generate the revenue.
Sure. Mr. Ortel, the U.S. Special Representative for Iran, Brian Hook, has said that Iran has just rejected diplomacy too many times. The United States is open to talks, but Iran keeps rejecting it, so we've intensified our sanctions. He also said that we will sanction any imports of Iranian crude oil. Now, the U.S. is using an economic war, basically, to prevent other signatories to the JCPOA to adhere to a deal that they signed. So by the looks of it, it's Washington that's obstructing diplomacy at this point, not Tehran.
Well, I'm happy to talk about tactics, and I think it's pleasing to many of us in the United States to see the American government standing firm to try to achieve a strategic goal. What is that strategic goal? People have been bringing up the UN. There is an element of the UN that provides excellent information. It's called UNCTAD. I sent to your producers a link to a very interesting set of tables, which I would encourage your viewers to consider, that shows the evolution of every nation on Earth, 1970 to 2017 by year, breaking down each nation's economy. And I would suggest people in Iran look at those statistics going back many, many years and trace the evolution of the Iranian economy versus the evolution, not just of the United States, but of Hungary's economy or Poland's economy or Malaysia's economy. And I think what is a sad case today for Iranians is that your economy is still heavily dependent on energy. Absolutely, it's the case that Iranian civilization going well back before even the thought of the United States of America was highly advanced and developed. Why is it so dependent today on one major source of exports? Has the great promise of the Iranian people done well in these last 40, 50 years? I don't think it has. And what I think the American people, forget about our government, but the American people want for the Iranian people is for the Iranian people to thrive the way they once did.
Okay.
And these talks of military adventurism around the world coming from Iran, who has such a challenged economy, makes little sense.
We've got time for final comment.
We're not interested in fine points just of agreements. We're interested in a strategic breakthrough
here. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're running short of time. We've got time for one last question to Mr. Samueli. You can respond to what Mr. Ortel just said, and also, if you can tell us, in your opinion, what is the driving force behind all of this rhetoric and anti-Iran tensions? Is it the fact that Iran is an independent country in the region and that irritates the United States, or is it Israel's interests, or both?
Yeah, just go back to what my colleague said. It's always very touching to listen to Americans pontificating about what they would like to see for the Iranian people, how they really, really would love to see the Iranian people flourish and prosper, even as they impose the cruelest and harshest of sanctions on Iran. The hostility to Iran, I think, is twofold. I mean, Iran is independent, and Iran broke away from the United States. I mean, back in the 1960s and 70s, Iran was a pillar of the Nixon doctrine. It was, the stalwart in the Cold War struggle against the Soviet Union. And Iran broke away from that. And that's something that the United States does not forgive. It didn't forgive when Cuba broke away, and it hasn't forgiven Iran's breaking away. So there's that. And of course, the Israeli connection is there. So neither of these applies to most of the rest of the world.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're fresh out of time. I'm sorry to interrupt you there. Thanks to my guest political analyst Charles Ortel joining us from New York, and also senior research fellow at Global Policy Institute George Samueli joining us from Budapest, and also a special thanks to you, our viewers, for staying with us on tonight's debate. It's good night, everybody.